Hello and welcome to this edition of Radio Free HPC. This is where we talk about supercomputing, high-performance computing, and other technology topics. I'm your Toastmaster, Rich Breckner from Inside HPC, with my co-hosts Dan Olds from Gabriel Consulting and Henry Newman from Seagate Government Technologies. Now let's get to the show.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Radio Free HPC. I'm Dan Olds, joined as always by our good friend Henry S. Newman. The S stands for storage. And Rich Bruckner. How you doing, guys?
I'm doing well, Dan. Rich, good to talk to you guys late in the evening.
It's great to be calling in from Frankfurt, Germany.
We are in Frankfurt, Germany, and we have a special guest on the line, Shaheen Khan. Shaheen, hey, how are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm delighted to be invited to this exalted group. Hope I can not reduce the degree of humor that you guys offer.
Humor and intelligence. Let's hope that you increase the average as opposed to take it down.
I'll do my best.
Excellent. Shaheen is a partner at Orion X, and I'm actually a partner at Orion X as well. Shaheen goes way back in HPC. Oh boy, when would you date your involvement, Shaheen? When you were 8-10 years old?
Yeah, about that time. Yes, yes. No, but that I started pretty much immediately.
Really?
After college, doing parallel processing with the project that we had at IBM with the loosely coupled array of processors way back when under Dr. Clementi, who had an awesome lab. So I was one of the early guys there, and saw all of that, and then moved on to other things. So yeah, from the beginning.
I didn't know that you knew that you worked for Clementi. I knew him.
Oh, I did too. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was an IBM fellow at the time.
And yes.
Just an awesome guy.
Yes, absolutely. And you were also quite instrumental at the HPC program for Cray Research in the original instance of Cray, and then at Sun Microsystems after that.
Well, Cray Business Systems Division is really where I ended up, trying to apply supercomputing technology to commercial applications and really learning about why commercial systems would benefit from supercomputing technologies. And then at Sun Microsystems to try to bring some of the Java technologies and web scale technologies and web standards into HPC and visualization. And then, of course, also a quick stint at SGI.
And like you say, you're truly a industry treasure.
Well, I hope my friends and loved ones think that way.
How about and Shaheen, your partner?
Yeah.
You forgot about your partners think that way.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Yeah, they have to. It's part of the qualification to be part of Orion X.
Well, that and plus he constantly reminds us. So, well, the big news here, and there's no keeping it under wraps anymore, is that we have a brand new computer that has dominated the top 500. Rich, why don't you give us the quick specs on it, little feeds and speeds, if you will.
Okay. So, let's give this thing a name. This is the new number one supercomputer in the top 500. It's called the Sunway Taihu Light System. Well,
let's go ahead and just call it the Tail Light System, because that's all anybody's going to see.
Well, apparently Taihu is a lake in China somewhere. So, and Sunway would be that's the American spelling of the manufacturer. And this is an all domestic Chinese supercomputer. So the processor is not Intel. It is a Chinese design processor. It's called the SW206010. It is a RISC processor with 260 cores.
That is 260 cores.
Okay.
And many cores.
Many cores indeed. This thing is hooked together with they're not calling it InfiniBand, but it's a Mellanox technology silicon interconnect. Let's see, what are the other interesting specs on this thing? So it came in at 93 petaflops. Dan,
that's 93 petaflops. That is 3x the record before.
Yeah, and that's on Linpack. That's not peak. That's the tested submission. So number one. at
93. So, Rich, when have we ever jumped 3X before? Have we ever done that?
No, I think the Earth Simulator did that.
Yeah, I think the K computer did that, actually.
Well, I thought that was a 2X, but you might be right.
Or it might have been the Earth Simulator, but it's been a while.
It's been quite a while. I seem to remember the Earth Simulator, and that kicked off a lot of investment in our country from the government in supercomputing.
Yes.
And that was a long time ago. That was more than 15 years.
Yeah, I forget what the Tianhe system, which is number 2 now. So number 1 and 2 are both Chinese, but that is, I think, it came up to 37 petaflops.
That was impressive, too.
I think Sequoia at the time was 12, so maybe tripling.
But it's not often that you do 3X better than the last guy.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, guys, I did a little quick calculation in my back of the envelope. The top 10 in the U.S. came up to 56 petaflops, and then the top 2 in China came to 126.
The balance of power has changed
significantly. Rich, what else has happened on the top 500?
Well, one of the things that there's hearings about exascale funding in Congress this week. I hear one of the big headlines is that for the first time, the U.S. does not have the most systems on the top 500. China does.
Wow.
That's right.
I don't believe we have the performance lead anymore either, do we? Or it's got to be close.
Yeah. Now,
well, some U.S. vendors have the performance lead in terms of cumulative flops they offer.
Yeah. Now, that's a deceptive number because China had a national campaign to get data centers to submit LINPACK, and so some of these were probably not HPC centers. They were big web-serving places. But they all of a sudden they just had dozens and dozens appeared out of nowhere. And that's
Lenovo went from 32 to 80 something.
Yeah. Well, hey, they're within the rules of top 500 submission, and they're in there.
But this is why voting counts, because they started counting.
Yeah.
Right.
So, indeed.
But you can say that HPC is not boring anymore.
No. No, the list has become exciting again.
This is exciting stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and frankly, the list has been rather dull. It's been 3.5 years with one machine at the top, and the top 10 has changed very little in that period.
Right.
So,
well, let's dig into this a little bit. What kind of machine is this? Henry, you had some interesting theories on that.
Well, I'm just guessing. I mean, my guess is just... And I don't, Shaheen might disagree. I think it's going to be a MIPS based on MIPS and processor. It's going to be their own design, of course, but it's going to be based on MIPS. I think there's some interesting things I read about the fact that, there's one thread per core. They're not looking at cache coherency on this machine. So I think you have to program around it. So, in my mind, this is one of those machines, because it's so floating point intensive, it's got 8 floating point operations per clock, which is a lot. It's almost, in the vector kind of machine, 8 per clock. But it didn't look like there was a lot of ability to do address calculations. Mm-hmm. And there were no caches. So you just got to fire off all these cores to the memory controller and then, get the data and have it stream in. So my guess is... everything in this machine is it's going to be working on sequential data. If it's random data, sparse matrix calculations, it's going to, I think, architecturally have a problem. But we are moving to application-specific supercomputer design. And I think this might be moving in that direction. Shaheen, what do you think?
Well, there have been several efforts in China about microprocessors, and there was a Longson chip and a Susong chip that were based on MIPS, I think, if I'm not mistaken, with some collaboration with ST Microelectronics in about a decade ago. And this one, the Shenwei processor, now this is not the first time Sunway is on the top 500. They had a system back in 2011 that also made a lot of news. I think it showed up like at somewhere in the mid 100 and between 100 and 200, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, this one, I think they call it the blue light.
The blue light, exactly.
Blue light special.
Yeah, that's right. So that one, there isn't a lot of public info about it, but the little public info that was around it back then was that the CPU was inspired by Alpha.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that means. It probably means that, you know, its characteristics, you know, the fact that it's super scalar, that it does four issue, that it has, you know, how many integer, how many floating point, those may have some similarities to Alpha. And it did at that time. This one is a brand new chip. This is not the SW3 that had like 16 cores, if I'm not mistaken. This is the next rev. That one was SW1600. This is like SW26010, something like that. That with 260 cores, it could be completely different. So for all I know, it could be MIPS, it could be their own instruction set altogether, it could be Alpha inspired. Really, who cares? I think what in some ways, you know, who cares? But what I do think it implies is, like you said, Henry, is that this is clearly highly optimized for Limpac at some, you know, over 10 million cores with a matrix that is about 12 million on each side. This almost feels like the data is getting just streamed through the processors, like in a SIMD system used to do. And it is highly optimized for that. So I think calling it application specific, it shouldn't be too far from, you know, the truth when we end up knowing a lot more about it.
Well, let's talk about applications, because there's a paper by Jack Dongara. There are three Gordon Bell submissions running on this system. So it's not just Limpac. All three applications have scaled to around 8 million cores, which is close to full system scale. One of them, it's a wave simulation of some kind, is sustained performance between 30 and 40 petaflops. Now think about it. There is no machine in the world that could run that today besides this, right? So,
but you know, Rich, if you remember, you know, in the early 90s, there was this discussion about Amdahl's law, and then, you know, John Gustafson came up with his revelation, and, you know, what we call now the Gustafson's law. Yeah. And, you know, Amdahl's law was all about, you know, keeping the problem size fixed and seeing how fast you could run it, so to say. And Gustafson's law really recognized that if you keep the time fixed, you can now run bigger and bigger and bigger problems in that space. So, you know, it's that analogy that somebody was saying in the years ago that, you know, if you're mowing your lawn in your backyard, you know, maybe two people can do it faster, but 200 people are just going to not even fit. They're going to hit each other. So in order to get big scalability, you need a big problem, which is really why, you know, the NMAX for the machine at number one now, the Sunway machine, is 12 million by 12 million. You know, you can't probably do it, you know, 200,000 by 200,000 matrix and get much performance or much efficiency. And even at 12 million, they're getting about 75% efficiency. So those are all considerations. And if you make the problem size big enough, you can paralyze the heck out of it.
Yeah. Hmm. I mean, this is a monster, guys. I didn't get to the packaging, but just picture, okay, there's 40 cabinets here. They're not like 40 racks, standard size. These are big cabinets. Right. Each rack is 3 petaflops. Water-cooled.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Just incredible.
And actually, if you were going to go with GPUs, which is the fastest technology, you know, up until now that we know about, you can get 2 petaflops in one massive rack of GPUs, and they're doing 3 with these.
Yeah, with
that's
no
something.
Accelerators. Yeah,
with no accelerators.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Now, could they put an accelerator in this thing down the road?
Well, you know, at 260 cores per chip, you could argue that it already is an accelerator.
How many
cores do you want before you call it many core?
Well, right? But it goes going back to what I think the machine is architected to is there's no cache coherency. So this is about, you know, one of the things that slows everything down and is without cache, you don't need coherency. And, you know, this goes back to what I was trying to point out. Yeah, this is a application specific for large matrix, large sequential matrix calculations. It's an application-specific supercomputer, in my opinion.
And it reduces your address bandwidth requirements, doesn't it?
Yes, sure does. And it reduces your architectural complexity of what you've got to design, too.
But, you know, what is really noteworthy is that it's a system design. It's not just a system integration. You know, so what's happened in supercomputing is that we moved from a world where you needed to design a system to get on the chart to a point where you could integrate existing systems to get on the chart. And I think that was part of the reason why you saw the proliferation of, you know, vendors and international players and new countries joining and all that, is because they could just assemble clusters rather than having to design them.
It became a financial exercise as opposed to a computer science exercise.
Well, you know, you still needed to know integration. You had, you know, you need to have the technical expertise to do that. But that was a lot easier than to actually design a system. There are only a handful of companies that can actually design a system from scratch. So this is noteworthy in the sense that it really is a system design.
And that's what makes it so interesting and exciting. Kind of like the K. I think the last time we had this was the K computer that came out of
nowhere.
That's right,
which also is a beautiful machine, yes.
And I do have to, Henry, you and I both have to tip our hats to Rich, because he predicted this.
Yes, he did. And Rich, this means I'm buying dinner at SC16.
Yes, it does.
So I so at least for Rich, not you, Dan.
Our bet is still to come.
Yeah,
our bet is still out there.
Yeah. So let's do a little scuttlebutt, because I'm in, you know, here at the ISC. There's a lot of talk about what else is going on, perhaps in China. The rumor is that there's each province in China has been given a hero HPC project like this, and this is just the first of them that we've heard about. It's the first one to come, and so there's more to come, which is you know, very intriguing.
That lines up with what I heard when I was there for the ASC, for the student cluster competition. They gave us we had a couple of talks from some Chinese luminaries, and they were intimating at more things to come. Absolutely.
Yeah. So this machine is located in, I'm going to say it wrong, I'm sure, but in Wuxi, China, W-U-X-I. So
I think that's pretty close, actually.
So it's not NUDT where the Tianhe lives. It's a totally different computer center.
That's incredible stuff.
Yeah, you also have to remember that the top 500 is, you know, the best proxy we have to what's going on at the very high end. But it only provides the data that it provides, you know, not more.
Yes.
And how these systems get counted, and, you know, whether or not they're actually being used for HPC applications, and, you know, who started counting when, those all are important to know so that we don't make wrong conclusions. So, you know, my view is that at the top, you can see systems that are custom, one of a kind, you know, they're more of a monument rather than a market. Mm. And they're a good long-term indicator of no compromise performance. I think right below it is where the real interesting stuff is, which is, you know, the stuff that's more indicative of what is possible for the wider market and what technologies you can use to actually build your own system, you know, whether or not you're doing HPC. It's just, you know, if you want high performance, low latency, all that stuff. And at the bottom, you get a mix of the old systems that were so impressive that they're still there. And then you get a bunch of stuff that is interesting and high performance, but probably relevant to HPC.
Internet service providers, for instance.
Well, you know, those are systems that have never done a floating point in their life and are unlikely to do, but they count because they obviously are significant clusters and they're important. So they are high performance. They're just not HPC, supercomputing, numerically intensive. Mm.
But right? how hard would it be to switch, you know, two versions of the same chip, one version that's floating point intensive, one version that's energy intensive, and take this construct where you're not having cache coherency and every thread is operating independently and you have a shared memory, and you would have pretty kick butt you know, cloud system for, you know, web serving and things like that for applications.
Well, yeah, if your apps can live with that. And of course, you know, we live in a world where more and more of the burden of application, you know, correctness and scalability is on the developer. So you could throw one more on the developer and say, well, make sure, you know, the cache coherency is something you don't rely on.
Well, no, but Shane, I'm not talking for HPC. I'm talking about for, say, a web server or for a bunch of different VMs.
For a cloud provider type thing.
That's what I'm talking about.
Well, you know, that world is all going towards microservices right now and containers and scale out so you can spin up and spin down. And it's all entirely relying on lack of coherence, really. Some of those really do need bigger systems to run on, but a lot of the modern stuff is designed to be able to scale out in, you know, microsecond level types of environment.
Yeah, I mean, they measure its effectiveness by people will only tolerate 200 to 400 microseconds of latency between they click on something on their phone and when they get their Facebook service or whatever has to be delivered. So
that's right.
You can't have a monumental service spun up that quickly, so it has to be something like a microservice.
It has to be already running, and it just kind of serves you. But then, you know, the more distributed you get, the more of the interconnect problem you're going to have. And it's not just, you know, users coming in. It's the modules within an application talking to each other. So I think the requirement for high bandwidth, low latency isn't going to go away. And, you know, this is what, you know, Dan and I and within OrionX we call the high-performance interconnect market segment.
Yeah, we've been analyzing that recently, and that's just only going to become a more dog-eat-dog market.
So, guys, I think there's a lot to talk about, and I think this is just the beginning of the Chinese domination of the top 500 list. I don't see this changing very quickly.
It's going to take a few years, at least. I mean, it's going to take a few years to begin to make a change in it.
Correct.
And they've got a big head start.
Correct.
They do. You know, to be fair, the Coral systems are coming in 2017, 2018. I heard an interesting statistic about, I think it's the biggest one, is at Oak Ridge that they're planning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you totaled up the entire top 500, it would not equal that one Coral system that they have on the board. So the U.S. is not sitting still, is the point.
No. Plus, the other thing is that I think this might accelerate the adoption of the conjugate gradient benchmark in addition to LIMPAC.
Mm.
Because, you know, like I like to say, all benchmarks are radioactive. They've got a half-life of some measure, and you learn to optimize around it in a way that kind of is meaningless for what it was originally set out to do. So I think you may want additional metrics that indicate a little bit more of a general purpose nature.
I think you're completely right, Shaheen. And by the way, this new Sunway machine is number 3 on the HBCG list. So it doesn't even come out on top, interestingly enough, on a more diverse type
That's
of benchmark that involves, well, it involves
right.
memory and things, right? That
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And it might involve things where you have to deal with multiple threads and things like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, going back to the, you know, sequential, high performance, single, you know, non-random access memory, that's what this machine's all about. I mean, and we're going to see, I think, more HPC systems in the near future that will diverge from LINPACK but get the job done as we move to FPGAs and some of that other technologies that are right on our doorstep.
Yeah,
and it's interesting. In Asia, Jack Dongara was explaining HPCG and basically saying that you look at LINPACK and HPCG as bracketing the performance of your supercomputer. LINPACK is the very best, biggest you're going to get out of it. HPCG is about the worst case you can get because it is so torturous in so many different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think FFTs might be more torturous, I agree that it gives you a nice bracket.
And I agree with Shaheen about FFTs and lots of the world, they are done quite often, especially when you do a big transpose. But bracketing, the fact that it's number 3 on the bracketed side, Dan, I think actually says something important. It's not number 1, but it's number 3.
Yeah, it's impressive.
It's darn impressive. It's the bracket. So,
yeah.
Well, I don't have anything else to say. I'm just going to go sit on my deck. because it's 100 degrees here.
And consider,
well, you know, along those lines, it's a good reminder that, you know, David Cook, who was one of the you know, luminaries of the market years ago, you know, he once, I think, had said that, if I'm not mistaken, that the minimum performance of a system is more important than the maximum performance. Now, minimum, of course, can be zero, so he wasn't meaning that. He was saying that, you know, it's sort of a compile and go performance that you know, and as time goes by, the difference between that minimum performance and the maximum you can get is just, you know, expanding. So if you spend, you know, 6 months optimizing code, you can really, you know, get a lot out of it, but then, you know, how many people can do that? So you,
right.
But you know, Shaheen, if you bring the minimum up, you've done a lot more contribution. Yeah.
But Gene, remember, the minimum, as I think, as we go forward, given network topologies, network performance, of all the other things, the minimum performance, we're going to have specialized machines running applications. I'm not so sure that applies as we move forward, because different machines are going to be doing different kinds of workloads.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, killer apps or apps that are always going to be running, sure. I mean, the embedded apps in the old days, we used to call them, right? Those you can afford to optimize in a big way.
Yep.
But if you're on Wall Street, you know, you compile and go every day. You know, you're not going to have time to go optimize. Maybe some things, but not many other things.
You mean you're not running everything off a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet in Wall Street? Yeah, I know that's not true. There's a lot of Monte Carlo theory going. And by the way, that's not going to work well, I think, on this machine, given it a memory structure. Monte Carlo, I don't think, will work well. I don't think graph will work well at all on this machine. So, you know, that's –
Yeah.
So,
yeah, well, no, guys, it was right.
Good stuff.
In general, predictable behavior allows you to optimize better. So any application that is behaving unpredictably is very difficult to optimize.
Ah, interesting.
Well, so in a way, that kind of indicates why HPC apps are amenable to optimization, because you've got a mathematical formula that governs it, that makes it somewhat predictable.
Yes. Well, speaking of predictability, not many people other than our own Rich Bruckner predicted this. So again, hats off to you, Rich. And it's been a very interesting conversation.
Very good. Well, thank you guys for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you for coming on, and we'll have you on again down the road.
All right.
And thank everybody out there for listening. We appreciate it. We'll be coming at you with a new episode of Radio Free HPC very soon.
That's it for this edition of Radio Free HPC. Thank you for listening, and be sure to check back often for new episodes. Also, check out our website for more content, links, and a place for you to let us know what you think about the show. We're at RadioFreeHPC.com. Thanks again. We'll be back with another exciting episode real soon.